C1 PR. Number 6A.
Now, what we have been considering as the introductory sense through the scriptural note is naturally something which goes right through the whole chapter. It is our mental attitude of prayer. It is the inward, deep-seated attitude which we must have when we approach the subject of God. Now, we come to the subjects themselves. And the first subject I would perhaps epitomize, but you may epitomize them differently, and every other week I go over it, I have another epitome too, but they always turn around and around the same tone. It is, so to say, here, the prayer of wisdom to desire or to seek God as He is. It's a prayer of wisdom which shows itself in a true desire, in a desire to know God as God is. So, let me go through this short subject and see what it implies. Anyway, we see right at the beginning when we read this subject through some once, twice, three times, four times, that prayer has nothing to do with our human desires and wishes. That this chapter on prayer does not tell us how we shall go about that our human desires and human wishes will be fulfilled by God. It asks us to leave the old sense of desire and to get a new sense of desire, a new sense of what we really need. The desire of wisdom is that wisdom which is willing to desire God not in another way than what He is. That's a big wisdom. Seems so simple, and it seems so superfluous to tell that and to dwell on it the whole hour. But it only seems so, because the depth of it is far-reaching and beautiful beyond words. It is that wonderful sense that says, well, if I want that God is helping me, then I must be willing to let Him help me the way He can help. So it is a sense of being completely willing to let our desires and wishes, our informations to God and our advice to God go. And start scientifically. If I want something from God Almighty, well, He can't do it in another way than what He is. So I jolly well have to submit myself to the nature of God as He is. Do I desire that? That's the first big question. That's the first big subject. Do I desire really to welcome God, to accept God, to know God the way He is, and not the way I want Him to be? It's a great surrender of human wishes and human desires. So, right at the beginning of the textbook, this big question comes up, well, what is God? How is God what He is? And in this first subject of mine, when we read it, and through and through, just letting the spiritual sense be awake in us, getting free of words, but just listening, what does the text say? What does the tone of the text say? We'll find that in this subject predominates that first wonderful touch of a picture what God is. It is not yet a firm, clear-cut definition as an answer to the question, what is God? But it is so gently put that every beginner who is in earnest from the beginning already gets a vast, though tender, sense of God. It is so great how right at the beginning the most important false concepts we have of God and the universe are set right. You know that in our human experience, everything happens within the three dimensions of space and the fourth dimension of time, and that within this space-time continuum, as they call it, everything happens according to the law of probability, not of the law of certainty. So the frame in which human life lives, so to say, our whole life experience is framed in that big frame that there is a space, that there is time, and that everything within space and time happens unpredictably, according to the law of probability. And Mrs. Eddy comes right in the first tone and says that right, and counteracts these three false concepts of space, time, and probability. Unpredictedness. Is that the word? Doesn't matter. You know what I mean. And so, take your time and investigate gently, lovingly, that first subject. I think it is question 9 and 10 and 11 on this respect. What does she say? Does she say, right at the beginning, that everything happens within space? No. She corrects the sense that everything happens within space through the sense which goes through the whole first subject and says, no, God is infinite and all. That's God's space, God's dimensions. And they are not limited. And so you get that sense that in here time and time, God is the infinite, God bestows all good, God is the all-loving, God knows all, that God is the infinite mind, that God is the source of all existence and blessedness, God is the divine principle of all goodness, that he cannot be circumscribed. See, we get an introduction to God. It's not a personal introduction to God. It's a scientific introduction to God. And a scientific introduction to God says, God has no limits. It is infinite and it's all. It counteracts the belief that everything happens within time. And through that whole first tone goes the sense, God is, and all is isness, said, the desire for righteousness is blessed by our Father, not will be blessed. God is not moved to do more than he has already done. That already comes time and time. God already knows all. The infinite mind already comprehends all. The open fount is pouring forth more than we accept. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. God is immutably alive. The rule is already established. His work is done. Can you get the tone? The isness. First, the allness and infinitude of God. And says that allness and infinitude is. And then she counteracts the sense that everything happens unpredictably. She says, no. God is unchangeable. There is not a constant change where you don't know where you are. Our future is not unpredictable. Because we have a God who is unchangeable and therefore firm, and therefore we can rely on its law. That's why through this first subject goes that tone that deity is unchangeable. That God is unchanging wisdom and love. That the signs of being cannot be changed. That perfection cannot be changed. That God is always the same yesterday and today and forever. It just doesn't change. And she speaks of God who is immutably right. So, we have already a nice introduction into the allness, isness, and immutability of God. But she goes even further in this first subject and gives a slight definition of what this infinite isness is. And in every subtone of this chapter, she depicts the nature of God. So she depicts it in the first subtone already as that God is the mind that knows all. In the second, that God reflects himself in blessing. That is his nature, that God reflects himself. You get the sense of spirit. In the third, she speaks that God is unchangeable soul. In the fourth, that God is the signs of being. You get principle. In the fifth, she says that God is the source of all existence, is the sense of life. And in the sixth, she gives the sense of truth. God is and does always right, the rightness of truth. And in the last one, she gives already a sense of love, where she says, God's work is done. So, that's the gentleness of the textbook. It doesn't write starting by a question, what is God? And answers, God is. Incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The beginner couldn't do a thing with that. It would be abstract, absolute, meaningless. That comes in her tender, gentle touch of a woman, says, all right, I take you where you are. And introduces through many ways and wordings and embellishments, introduces and says, you know, God is spaceless, timeless, unchangeable. This God presents itself as that God who knows all, as that God who always reflects himself in blessing, as that God who is always unchanging, he doesn't change. That God is that which has a science in itself, carries a science of being in himself. You know, God is the source of all that exists. You know, he says, six, God is the truth and is always right, therefore. You don't have to worry that one time he is not right. He's always right. And says, you know, God is love. His work is done. And so, the tone is set for the first subject. Start right in with God. But, this is the sense as a goal, a first picture of God as the goal. But the prayer is the approach to this God. And so the first subject shows us how to approach this God. But naturally, she must, as we have seen in the introduction paragraph, unless the aim, the object of our search is not set right from the beginning, we may seek something wrong. That's the reason why already in the first subject, she has to give some picture, some illustration or some circumscription of what God is. And so we can ask ourselves now, how do we approach that God as he is? And so I go through the text of the first subject. First, she says, well, true prayer is the desire, first, to be willing that our thoughts are molded by the divine mind. See, she says, all right, now where do I begin? Where has everybody to begin? She says, where I have to begin is that desire that my thoughts are first molded by that mind who knows my true desires. First molded by that mind which is God and is and knows what my need is. So the approach to it is my willingness that my thoughts are going to be molded so that my thoughts can be exalted and exalted to the point where they come in line with God's desire. As a matter of fact, unless this willingness is not present, the whole textbook doesn't make sense. If anyone comes to us and is not willing to accept this wholeheartedly, we can just as well tell him, well, then I can't sell what you want to buy. Go to another shop. In my shop, I can only sell God as he is. Therefore, you have to pay the price. And to pay the price means that you are willing that you desire God as he is. That you are willing to let your concept of God go and take on that concept of God as he is. It's a great willingness to accept God as he is. See, it is mental. It doesn't start with something outward, it starts with our mentality. Is our mentality willing to desire God as he is or not? God is all. God is infinite. If we don't desire God as all, but if we just desire God to be some little help, we are not desiring God as he is. If we don't desire God as all, we don't desire God as he is. So many are saying to me, well, I don't want as much as that. I'm too humble and too meek for that. I'm quite happy if God is only looking after my little this and that problem. It's a sense of false humility. It's a sense of asking that God can be little, that the divine mind is not all. We are not searching and seeking for God as he is. So true desire is only the willingness to seek God's mind in its allness and for its allness. Then we come to the second tone where we see that the only motive for desire is to hunger after righteousness. Here we come to the motive of prayer. We come to the direction. Spirit always gives us the direction of our desire, the motive of our desire. And here she asks some questions and doesn't answer them. Sometimes she does answer questions, but mostly she doesn't, just as Jesus hardly ever answered the question. He usually put another question. Here she says, what is your motive? Now we come to the point, now we have to be quite clear, what is the motivating power of our prayer? And so she says, do we pray two. It's, they, all these questions there have a two in it. To make ourselves better. To benefit those who hear us. To enlighten the infinite. To be heard of men. Always is our motive to get something. Always for an effect. She doesn't answer it. She's so gentle. Instead of saying, oh no, that's not a right prayer. That's humbug. She leaves it. She's not the Swiss, you see. So she says, she gives the answer by saying, yes, the desire which goes forth hungering after righteousness, that is blessed by our Father. She wipes away gently that all the prayers which are addressed in order to get something are not right prayers. They are not directed to God. And so there are no prayers in science. We saw yesterday little Johnny, he was well aware of bananas, but not of 2 and 2 equal 4. But here, if you are interested to benefit me, to benefit the other, to be heard of men, to get this and that, to, we are interested in something outside of God. Prayer is to take God as He is. And so she says, that prayer which is hungering after righteousness, which is hungering to know God as He is, that prayer is blessed. Is blessed. She not even says, will be blessed. Because in the very fact of spirit, as we have seen yesterday, in the very fact of the true worship and longing is embedded unfoldment. All the others, quality of spirit, unfoldment, bringing birth, the fruit of spirit. And so it is blessed, because that's the blessing, that we long for God, that we hunger for God, that's the blessing. But the wrong prayer is not for blessing, but for benefactions. And so she puts right, quite right, says, well, are we benefited by praying? She says, after all, if I should not ask for an automobile and for a nicer husband and for nicer children and so on, what's the use then of prayer? Is there any use if I am not allowed to ask that? She said, if the motive of the desire is to hunger after righteousness, to know more about God, to come nearer to God, to come nearer to God, to know more about God, to get deeper into the essence of God, that longing is already your blessing. It is blessed by your Father. So that's the pure motive, a wonderful pure motive. You see, we always see the same thing. We only can go the way of life, we only can go the word through the qualities of the word. We cannot go along the days of creation without the qualities of the days of creation. As long as we go along the days of creation only from the point of view of mind, of thinking and studying and thinking, studying and desiring, we are not going through the qualities of the world, which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. We always hold in mind. Here she says, alright, if you do that second push and you hunger and thirst after righteousness, that is the blessing. That is unfoldment. And it does not return unto as well. You see, it's a third movement in it, which says, it is blessed, that's the second, and the third says, and that does not return unto us void. That has substance. In other words, the blessing is not the benefaction. The blessing is much deeper, it's the spiritual. The blessing is that where you say, well, that's the blessing that I love God, that I hunger and thirst after the righteousness. That's the blessing. And that's that substance, and that substance brings to me what God wants to bring to me. It returns to me things which God returns to me. But it has to return, it can't help to return, because the second day is unfoldment. So again, we see here in the second tone, the motive for prayer must always be directed towards always the same object, knowing God. First it was desire to be willing that our thoughts are molded by God, by the true object, God. Then the second says, all right, and I must put everything into it to reach, to approach, to get nearer to this God. And Spirit always gives the unfoldment, the direction of it. And so we come to the third subtone, where she says that God is not moved by the breath of praise to do more than he has already done, nor can the infinite do less than bestow all good, since his unchanging wisdom and love. We can do more for ourselves. Now comes the point of the approach. What have we to do? We can do more for ourselves by humble, fervent petition. But the all-loving does not grant them simply on the ground of lip service, for he already knows all. In this first great subject, we always have the interplay of supply and demand. Always of supply and demand. There is a supply which is God who knows our need. And then the approach to it of the first subject is, do we demand that supply as it is? Do we want to reach that supply as it is? And here it is that it says, God is unchangeable. All right, the consequence of it is, I have to change. And she says, you have to change. And you do much better if you see that, and therefore get that humbleness and that meekness which is necessary to be willing to let God be as he is, and not to interfere with his government. So here we get that sense of soul which is unchanging wisdom, that deity is unchanging, that balance of soul, and the approach to it through humble gives you a sense of the third beatitude, blessed are the meek, humble, fervent petition, you have the third, second and first, a petition which is fervent, and yet humble, which is willing to accept God as he is. So that the word fervent is so wonderful, it's ardent. It's defined as ardent, as glowing. I would define it as deep-seated. It's a deep-seated petition, which is coupled with the humbleness to accept God, welcome God as he is. And against that she says, that is the true prayer, but the wrong prayer is the belief that we can move God. God is unchanging, but we believe we can move God by the breath of praise. Well, God is unchangeable, we have to change.